On this last Sunday of our sexuality series, we want to consider together how our bodies allow us to be in relationship with each other. So let's consider a flock of sheep, a murder of crows, a gaggle of geese, a herd of cows, an audience of squid, a quiver of cobras, or my new favorite, an ostentation of peacocks. So I wonder, what do you call a group of people who gather together on a Sunday morning? The chosen family. The LGBTQ community pioneered the term chosen family to honor the deep relationships that queer people surround themselves with in order to access the support and guidance that biological family cannot or will not provide. The irony is that for most queer folks, chosen family does not start out as a choice. Nothing can be taken for granted in a queer family. Rejection, confusion, or awkwardness are often the result of coming out to biological family, and chosen family can play a vital role in providing love and support, connections, and mentorship across generations. And so we should learn from our queer brothers and sisters about this model of chosen family. For many of us, we may have found the church to be a place of pain and injury. We may have found that places where we grew up and were loved came to be places of condemnation or judgment, or at least places that eventually become awkward and uncomfortable to go home to. So we have joined this place, assembly, and we choose each other. Well, we may not choose each other exactly, but we choose this community, a family of families. A group that gathers together Sunday morning to be community to each other, and then during the week to be community to each other, and maybe each day to be community to each other. We gather together to resist the world, to do things differently. Jesus says, "Those who do God's work are my mother and my brothers." Family and welcome is only made in practice. And practice is done in our bodies in relationship with one another. My family was a family of welcome. Both my grandparents' families were part of groups that sponsored refugees to come to Canada. And those refugee families became part of our family. They came to Christmas and Easter and other holidays. They've celebrated with our family through the years. My grandmothers, both sides, always had another place at the table. And my ideas of family were pushed open and exploded when I was in middle school and my mom came out as lesbian and my parents divorced. No one in our church community was divorced. People knew people who were divorced, but not in our church. And no one in our church community was gay. And no one knew anyone who was gay. For the people in my community, my mom was gay either because she was possessed by a demon or because she had gone to university. I'm not kidding. It's true. I think that for many people, the demon possession was actually an easier explanation. It came from the outside. It could be dealt with. In the story that we heard, Jesus' mother was on her way to rescue him, and she was worried about demon possession, too. She was trying to pull him out of ministry because she was worried he was overworking himself, he wasn't eating, he was being taken advantage of. Maybe she was worried that the demons he was casting out were entering him. What we know is that she was worried he was out of his mind. But when she arrived, he didn't go with her. He didn't respond to those concerns. Instead, he responded to those around him. He stayed where he was, with his chosen family. But lest we think that he separated himself from his mother and his brothers, Jesus's mother was not gone. She stuck with him. And later, when he was dying on the cross, we know that she was there. She was present when so many others had left. And in John, we hear Jesus look down from the cross and see his mother standing there. And one of the disciples was standing next to her, and Jesus told his mother, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And the writer of John concludes, "From that hour, the disciple took her into his own home." Biological and chosen kinship do not have to be mutually exclusive. I think Jesus expands the definition of family. Jesus does not cast out one in favor of the other. I grew up hearing about adoption into the family of God as something that God does. God chooses us, adopts us, our bodies into Christ's body. And on one hand, this is true. God chooses you, and you, and you, and you, all of us. God chooses each and every person to be part of the family. But this story with Jesus is a story where adoption into the family is about choice. It is about the adoption, our adoption, of practices and values that Jesus values highly. It is the movement of beliefs and hopes from our heads into our bodies. It is about the adoption of practices that result into our adoption into the family. The values that Jesus values, those of tolerance, compassion, concern for neighbors, of love of those who are different, these are the things that bring us to the point where we can call ourselves members of Christ's family. So for me, growing up when family didn't fit the rural area expectations, we had to find others, friends, another church to be family with. For a while, I think my parents and my siblings desperately tried to make our family fit, but it didn't. And instead, we had to come to see family as a bigger thing. It had to include both of my parents, my mom's partner, new grandparents, and a new community. It also included this LGBTQ Mennonite community that, at that time and still, didn't have many kids in it, but they embraced us. But it wasn't easy. My mom lost friends, my dad lost his partner, me and my sisters lost playmates, and eventually we all moved away. We all lose something. As an adult, I have made a new family out of grief. And in some ways, that has been an easier task. It has been a task of repairing rather than a task of redefining in a stifling context. After my marriage ended and Mitch's wife Heidi died, we became family together. And it was easier to make our circles of family wider. We had both lost a lot, and neither of us wanted to lose anything else. So Mitch's family became my family, and my family became his, and Heidi's family became mine, and so on. When Augie was born, the boys wanted his last name to be Siemens Rhodes, so that his last name could match theirs. Instead, we have four different last names in our family. And Augie, August, is named for Grandma Jan Siemens' grandfather and his grandfather before him. So, and if you have ever seen Augie run to Grandma Jan, then you know that this is family. Not family by blood, but is family. And if you have met Xu Dong, who has lived with us for 2.5 years, and likely another 2 more, you will know that he, too, is family to us. and his mother has come and become an auntie to Augie because neither of them could speak when she first came. But now he does speak, and whenever Shudong talks to her over Skype, Augie always, always joins in. We learn about chosen family, about the family of families, from our own experience and from the experience of others. And as I alluded to, we learn also from our queer brothers and sisters. Sarah Noog, who is a theologian, lesbian theologian, reminds us that, quote, coming out queer is not just about a single individual's journey. It's a collective journey that for many entails re-scripting of the cast of characters who will be by your side through thick and thin. This is not just a queer journey, she says. This is the Christian journey. This expansion of the people of God. In the Hebrew Bible, it was primarily enacted through biological reproduction and ties. God promises to Abram that he will multiply his descendants. But Jesus and his followers, they inaugurate a new model of kinship. One is adopted in the family of God, not through birth or blood, but through decision and action. End quote. So we adopt each other, literally and figuratively. My older boys are not my biological children, but I have adopted them. And they are now Canadian citizens by rights of my birth. Not only are they legally mine, they are mine. Heart, mind, and soul. But that does not mean that they are not Heidi's. You see, a bigger picture of family does not mean less love. It is more and more connections. See, the candle does not get any smaller. See how each flame just grows. The family gets bigger. The flame gets stronger. When Jesus asks, "Who are my mother and brothers?" he does not disown them. He makes the family bigger. Here at Assembly, when someone covenants, we don't kick someone else out. The circle just gets larger and thicker and richer. Look around. I get to see you all. Look at these bodies, at this mess of humanity with all its moral and spiritual and physical beauty and imperfection. With each of us, our family of families, our story becomes a bigger one, a thicker one, a strengthened one. In a form of therapy called narrative therapy, it's the role of the therapist to thicken the story. That is, to take the story that the client comes in telling and make it more complex, to add layers. If the story I have told myself is that I always fail, the therapist I'm working with looks for one occasion, no matter how small, when I succeeded, and adds that to the narrative of my life. So the story of my life becomes thicker. It gets more varied. Then the therapist keeps adding stories and eliciting a greater depth of experience from the client until the new story, the new narrative, allows for a new picture of the self. Similarly, when we add people to our community, we become stronger, more complex. We thicken ourselves with experiences and expertise, with gifts and skills and grief. And these gifts are not always easy to accept because, as I said, we make our body more complex with each other. We might have to care for a person in a way that we didn't have to before. We might encounter a new person in grief that we as a community have not lived with before. And so we enter into relationships sometimes cautiously, though I would say that my experience of Jesus is one of rather wild, lavish love. And we know that because we're fully human, we will hurt each other. I imagine when Jesus made that comment, it might have hurt his mother and his brothers. We cause pain to each other. We may expose a grief or a wound that we've never experienced before. And then if we can stay with each other, if we allow these candles to glow rather than be extinguished in our pain, we can tend to each other. We can draw on our thickened experiences and make each other whole. Susan Slane is a UCC pastor who reminds us, in Christ we are forgiven all of our failed efforts at community and invited afresh to join the family of God and to rejoin the family of God. Last week, we looked at the deep pain and wounding that can happen in relationships when abuse occurs. We cried out, we lamented, and we acknowledged through the story of Tamar that this kind of destruction happens in families and with people that we know and love. In the same breath last week, we invited young and older people in the congregation into relationship with each other, to become mentors and mentees, to begin a shared journey of intimacy and care for each other. I am part of a pastor peer group of preacher mamas, and a number of my peers no longer have mentor programs at their churches. They no longer have them because they can't get mentors. People are too busy to participate. Or they no longer have them because they're concerned about the liability and the risk of having young people one-on-one with adults. But we choose to continue this program because we find it valuable, because it is countercultural to have cross-generational relationships, because the stories and experiences and strong bonds are important. We were talking at my small group on Wednesday about how long a mentor-mentee relationship lasts. And adults in the group said, well, my mentor came to my wedding. I'm visiting a mentee that I had years ago on the way out east. Strong bonds are important. And I don't have any trouble finding mentors. People want to know each other better. They want to be known. And we are careful. We want to keep people safe. We want to keep children safe. So we ask that a mentor be well known to the community, to participate in the life of the community for more than a year, to share their gifts, to be well grounded. And we now ask that they have background checks too. And we teach our children that they have a circle of grace, that no one should make them feel unsettled or uncomfortable in that circle of grace, and that they have more than one person they can talk to about that circle of grace. They are cared about and loved, and they are known by the people around them. There are many people in this community they can go to if they are hurt, and especially if they are hurt in their family or here. The thicker your community, the more flames you have around you, the less alone you are, the more resources you have, especially when we are hurt. This is a way we declare, this is a way we insist that we will raise kind and wise and resilient people. People who that when they encounter pain, they can overcome, that they have family to lean on. They know they are loved. This thing, this family of families, it's countercultural in some ways to say we're going to invest ourselves in community, to make yourself vulnerable, to be known, to allow yourself to trust these people, this community, to be adopted, to adopt others, to join a small group, to be mentored, to tell us your fears and vulnerabilities. Sometimes we won't succeed. Sometimes we don't. And we will hurt each other, and we will be hurt. But hopefully we have thickened ourselves with enough skills and enough stories that we can care for each other when we do that. Hopefully, we are healthy enough to know when our family needs help. Hopefully, this is a place where we can celebrate each other and our bodies together, that we can sing and dance and cry and shout together to weave a love that is able to grow and bend and blossom, and to know that we have a place, we are welcome here, and to know these people, these are my mothers, and these are my brothers. Amen.